This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents The Red Pony, written by John Steinbeck, read by Frank Muller.
The Gift. At daybreak, Billy Buck emerged from the bunkhouse and stood for a moment on the porch looking up at the sky. He was a broad, bandy-legged little man with a walrus mustache, with square hands, puffed and muscled on the palms. His eyes were a contemplative, watery gray, and the hair which protruded from under his Stetson hat was spiky and weathered. Billy was still stuffing his shirt into his blue jeans as he stood on the porch. He unbuckled his belt and tightened it again. The belt showed, by the worn, shiny places opposite each hole, the gradual increase of Billy's middle over a period of years. When he had seen to the weather, Billy cleared each nostril by holding its mate closed with his forefinger and blowing fiercely. Then he walked down to the barn, rubbing his hands together. He curried and brushed two saddle horses in the stalls, talking quietly to them all the time, and he had hardly finished when the iron triangle started ringing at the ranch house. Billy stuck the brush and curry comb together and laid them on the rail and went up to breakfast. His action had been so deliberate and yet so wasteless of time that he came to the house while Mrs. Tiflin was still ringing the triangle. She nodded her gray head to him and withdrew into the kitchen. Billy Buck sat down on the steps because he was a cowhand, and it wouldn't be fitting that he should go first into the dining room. He heard Mr. Tiflin in the house stamping his feet into his boots. The high, jangling note of the triangle put the boy Jody in motion. He was only a little boy, 10 years old, with hair like dusty yellow grass, and with shy, polite gray eyes, and with a mouth that worked when he thought. The triangle picked him up out of sleep. It didn't occur to him to disobey the harsh note. He never had. No one he knew ever had. He brushed the tangled hair out of his eyes and skinned his nightgown off. In a moment he was dressed, blue chambray shirt and overalls. It was late in the summer, so of course there were no shoes to bother with. In the kitchen he waited until his mother got from in front of the sink and went back to the stove. Then he washed himself and brushed back his wet hair with his fingers. His mother turned sharply on him as he left the sink. Jody looked shyly away. "I've got to cut your hair before long," his mother said. "Breakfast's on the table. Go on in so Billy can come." Jody sat at the long table, which was covered with white oilcloth, washed through to the fabric in some places. The fried eggs lay in rows on their platter. Jody took 3 eggs on his plate and followed with 3 thick slices of crisp bacon. He carefully scraped a spot of blood from one of the egg yolks. Billy Buck clumped in. "That won't hurt you," Billy explained. "That's only a sign the rooster leaves." Jody's tall, stern father came in then, and Jody knew from the noise on the floor that he was wearing boots, but he looked under the table anyway to make sure. His father turned off the oil lamp over the table, for plenty of morning light now came through the windows. Jody did not ask where his father and Billy Buck were riding that day, but he wished he might go along. His father was a disciplinarian. Jody obeyed him in everything without questions of any kind. Now Carl Tiflin sat down and reached for the egg platter. "Got the cows ready to go, Billy?" he asked. "In the lower corral," Billy said. "I could just as well take him in alone." "Sure you could, but a man needs company. Besides, your throat gets pretty dry." Carl Tiflin was jovial this morning. Jody's mother put her head in the door. "What time do you think to be back, Carl?"
"I can't tell. I've got to see some men in Salinas. Might be gone till dark."
The eggs and coffee and big biscuits disappeared rapidly. Jody followed the 2 men out of the house. He watched them mount their horses and drive 6 old milk cows out of the corral and start over the hill toward Salinas. They were going to sell the old cows to the butcher. When they disappeared over the crown of the ridge, Jody walked up the hill in back of the house. The dogs trotted around the house corner, hunching their shoulders and grinning horribly with pleasure. Jody patted their heads, Doubletree Mutt with the big thick tail and yellow eyes, and Smasher, the shepherd, who had killed a coyote and lost an ear in doing it. Smasher's one good ear stood up higher than a collie's ear should. Billy Buck said that always happened. After the frenzied greeting, the dogs lowered their noses to the ground in a businesslike way and went ahead, looking back now and then to make sure that the boy was coming. They walked up through the chicken yard and saw the quail eating with the chickens. Smasher chased the chickens a little to keep in practice in case there should ever be sheep to herd. Jody continued on through the large vegetable patch where the green corn was higher than his head. The cow pumpkins were green and small yet. He went on to the sagebrush line where the cold spring ran out of its pipe and fell into a round wooden tub. He leaned over and drank, close to the green mossy wood where the water tasted best. Then he turned and looked back on the ranch, on the low whitewashed house girded with red geraniums, and on the long bunkhouse by the cypress tree where Billy Buck lived alone. Jody could see the great black kettle under the cypress tree. That was where the pigs were scalded. The sun was coming over the ridge now, glaring on the whitewash of the houses and barns, making the wet grass blaze softly. Behind him, in the tall sagebrush, the birds were scampering on the ground, making a great noise among the dry leaves. The squirrels piped shrilly on the side hills. Jody looked along at the farm buildings. He felt an uncertainty in the air, a feeling of change and of loss, and of the gain of new and unfamiliar things. Over the hillside, two big black buzzards sailed low to the ground, and their shadows slipped smoothly and quickly ahead of them. Some animal had died in the vicinity. Jody knew it. It might be a cow, or it might be the remains of a rabbit. The buzzards overlooked nothing. Jody hated them, as all decent things hate them, but they could not be hurt, because they made away with carrion. After a while, the boy sauntered downhill again. The dogs had long ago given him up and gone into the brush to do things in their own way. Back through the vegetable garden he went, and he paused for a moment to smash a green muskmelon with his heel. But he was not happy about it. It was a bad thing to do, he knew perfectly well. He kicked dirt over the ruined melon to conceal it. Back at the house, his mother bent over his rough hands, inspecting his fingers and nails. It did little good to start him clean to school, for too many things could happen on the way. She sighed over the black cracks on his fingers, and then gave him his books and his lunch, and started him on the mile walk to school. She noticed that his mouth was working a good deal this morning. Jody started his journey. He filled his pockets with little pieces of white quartz that lay in the road, and every so often he took a shot at a bird or at some rabbit that had stayed sunning itself on the road too long. At the crossroads over the bridge he met two friends, and the three of them walked to school together, making ridiculous strides and being rather silly. School had just opened 2 weeks before. There was still a spirit of revolt among the pupils. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when Jody topped the hill and looked down on the ranch again. He looked for the saddle horses, but the corral was empty. His father was not back yet. He went slowly then toward the afternoon chores. At the ranch house, he found his mother sitting on the porch mending socks. "There's 2 doughnuts in the kitchen for you," she said. Jody slid to the kitchen and returned with half of one of the doughnuts already eaten and his mouth full. His mother asked him what he had learned in school that day, but she didn't listen to his donut-muffled answer. She interrupted, "Jody, tonight see you fill the wood box clear full. Lay the sticks flat tonight, and Jody, some of the hens are hiding eggs, or else the dogs are eating them. Look about in the grass and see if you can find any nests." Jody, still eating, went out and did his chores. He saw the quail come down to eat with the chickens when he threw out the grain. For some reason, his father was proud to have them come. He never allowed any shooting near the house for fear the quail might go away. When the wood box was full, Jody took his .22 rifle up to the cold spring at the brush line. He drank again and then aimed the gun at all manner of things, at rocks, at birds on the wing, at the big black pig kettle under the cypress tree, but he didn't shoot, for he had no cartridges, and wouldn't have until he was 12. If his father had seen him aim the rifle in the direction of the house, he would have put the cartridges off another year. Jody remembered this and did not point the rifle down the hill again. 2 years was enough to wait for cartridges. Nearly all of his father's presents were given with reservations which hampered their value somewhat. It was good discipline. The supper waited until dark for his father to return. When at last he came in with Billy Buck, Jody could smell the delicious brandy on their breaths. Inwardly, he rejoiced, for his father sometimes talked to him when he smelled of brandy, sometimes even told things he had done in the wild days when he was a boy. After supper, Jody sat by the fireplace, and his shy, polite eyes sought the room corners, and he waited for his father to tell what it was he contained, for Jody knew he had news of some sort. But he was disappointed. His father pointed a stern finger at him. "You'd better go to bed, Jody. I'm going to need you in the morning." That wasn't so bad. Jody liked to do the things he had to do, as long as they weren't routine things. He looked at the floor, and his mouth worked out a question before he spoke it. "What are we going to do in the morning, kill a pig?" he asked softly.
"Never you mind. You better get to bed."
When the door was closed behind him, Jody heard his father and Billy Buck chuckling, and he knew it was a joke of some kind. And later, when he lay in bed, trying to make words out of the murmurs in the other room, he heard his father protest, "But Ruth, I didn't give much for him." Jody heard the hoot owls hunting mice down by the barn, and he heard a fruit tree limb tap-tapping against the house. A cow was lowing when he went to sleep. When the triangle sounded in the morning, Jody dressed more quickly even than usual. In the kitchen, while he washed his face and combed back his hair, his mother addressed him irritably. "Don't you go out until you get a good breakfast in you." He went into the dining room and sat at the long white table. He took a steaming hot cake from the platter, arranged 2 fried eggs on it, covered them with another hot cake, and squashed the whole thing with his fork. His father and Billy Buck came in. Jody knew from the sound of the floor that both of them were wearing flat-heeled shoes, but he peered under the table to make sure. His father turned off the oil lamp, for the day had arrived, and he looked stern and disciplinary. But Billy Buck didn't look at Jody at all. He avoided the shy, questioning eyes of the boy and soaked a whole piece of toast in his coffee. Carl Tiflin said crossly, "You come with us after breakfast." Jody had trouble with his food then, for he felt a kind of doom in the air. After Billy had tilted his saucer and drained the coffee which had slopped into it and had wiped his hands on his jeans, the two men stood up from the table and went out into the morning light together, and Jody respectfully followed a little behind them. He tried to keep his mind from running ahead, tried to keep it absolutely motionless. His mother called, "Carl, don't you let it keep him from school." They marched past the cypress, where a single tree hung from a limb to butcher the pigs on, and past the black iron kettle. So it was not a pig killing. The sun shone over the hill and threw long, dark shadows of the trees and buildings. They crossed a stubble field to shortcut to the barn. Jody's father unhooked the door, and they went in. They had been walking toward the sun on the way down. The barn was black as night in contrast, and warm from the hay and from the beasts. Jody's father moved over toward the one box stall. "Come here," he ordered. Jody could begin to see things now. He looked into the box stall and then stepped back quickly. A red pony colt was looking at him out of the stall. Its tense ears were forward, and a light of disobedience was in its eyes. Its coat was rough and thick as an Airedale's fur, and its mane was long and tangled. Jody's throat collapsed in on itself and cut his breath short. "He needs a good currying," his father said. "And if I ever hear of you not feeding him or leaving his stall dirty, I'll sell him off in a minute." Jody couldn't bear to look at the pony's eyes anymore. He gazed down at his hands for a moment, and he asked very shyly, "Mine?" No one answered him. He put his hand out toward the pony. Its gray nose came close, sniffing loudly, and then the lips drew back and the strong teeth closed on Jody's fingers. The pony shook its head up and down and seemed to laugh with amusement. Jody regarded his bruised fingers.
"Well," he said with pride, "well, I guess he can bite all right."
The two men laughed, somewhat in relief. Carl Tiflin went out of the barn and walked up a side hill to be by himself, for he was embarrassed. But Billy Buck stayed. It was easier to talk to Billy Buck. Jody asked again,
"Mine?"
Billy became professional in tone.
"Sure. That is, if you look out for him and break him right. I'll show you how. He's just a colt. You can't ride him for some time."
Jody put out his bruised hand again, and this time the red pony let his nose be rubbed.
"I ought to have a carrot," Jody said. "Where'd we get him, Billy?"
"Bought him at a sheriff's auction," Billy explained. "A show went broke in Salinas and had debts. The sheriff was selling off their stuff."
The pony stretched out his nose and shook the forelock from his wild eyes. Jody stroked the nose a little. He said softly,
"There isn't a saddle?"
Billy Buck laughed.
"I'd forgot. Come along."
In the harness room, he lifted down a little saddle of red Morocco leather.
"It's just a show saddle," Billy Buck said disparagingly. "It isn't practical for the brush, but it was cheap at the sale."
Jody couldn't trust himself to look at the saddle either, and he couldn't speak at all. He brushed the shining red leather with his fingertips, and after a long time he said,
"It'll look pretty on him, though."
He thought of the grandest and prettiest things he knew.
"If he hasn't a name already, I think I'll call him Gabalon Mountains," he said.
Billy Buck knew how he felt.
"It's a pretty long name. Why don't you just call him Gabalon? That means hawk. That would be a fine name for him."
Billy felt glad.
"If you'll collect tail hair, I might be able to make a hair rope for you sometime. You could use it for a hackamore."
Jody wanted to go back to the box stall.
"Could I lead him to school, do you think, to show the kids?"
But Billy shook his head.
"He's not even halter broke yet. We had a time getting him here, had to almost drag him. You better be starting for school, though."
"I'll bring the kids to see him here this afternoon," Jody said.
Six boys came over the hill half an hour early that afternoon, running hard, their heads down, their forearms working, their breath whistling. They swept by the house and cut across the stubble field to the barn. And then they stood self-consciously before the pony, and then they looked at Jody with eyes in which there was a new admiration and a new respect. Before today, Jody had been a boy dressed in overalls and a blue shirt, quieter than most, even suspected of being a little cowardly. And now he was different. Out of a thousand centuries, they drew the ancient admiration of the footman for the horseman. They knew instinctively that a man on a horse is spiritually as well as physically bigger than a man on foot. They knew that Jody had been miraculously lifted out of equality with them and had been placed over them. Gabalon put his head out of the stall and sniffed them.
"Why don't you ride him?" the boys cried. "Why don't you braid his tail with ribbons like in the fair? When are you going to ride him?"
Jody's courage was up. He, too, felt the superiority of the horseman.
"He's not old enough. Nobody can ride him for a long time. I'm going to train him on the long halter. Billy Buck is going to show me how."
"Well, can't we lead him around a little?"
"He isn't even halter broke," Jody said.
He wanted to be completely alone when he took the pony out the first time.
"Come and see the saddle."
They were speechless at the red Morocco saddle, completely shocked out of comment.
"It isn't much use in the brush," Jody explained. "It'll look pretty on him, though. Maybe I'll ride bareback when I go into the brush."
"How are you going to rope a cow without a saddle horn?"
"Maybe I'll get another saddle for every day. My father might want me to help him with the stock."
He let them feel the red saddle and showed them the brass chain throat latch on the bridle and the big brass buttons at each temple where the headstall and brow band crossed. The whole thing was too wonderful. They had to go away after a little while, and each boy in his mind searched among his possessions for a bribe worthy of offering in return for a ride on the red pony when the time should come. Jody was glad when they had gone. He took brush and curry comb from the wall, took down the barrier of the box stall, and stepped cautiously in. The pony's eyes glittered, and he edged around into kicking position. But Jody touched him on the shoulder and rubbed his high, arched neck as he had always seen Billy Buck do, and he crooned, "So, boy," in a deep voice. The pony gradually relaxed his tenseness. Jody curried and brushed until a pile of dead hair lay in the stall, and until the pony's coat had taken on a deep red shine. Each time he finished, he thought it might have been done better. He braided the mane into a dozen little pigtails, and he braided the forelock, and then he undid them and brushed the hair out straight again. Jody did not hear his mother enter the barn. She was angry when she came, but when she looked in at the pony and at Jody working over him, she felt a curious pride rise up in her. "Have you forgot the wood box?" she asked gently. "It's not far off from dark, and there's not a stick of wood in the house, and the chickens aren't fed." Jody quickly put up his tools. "I forgot, ma'am." "Well, after this, do your chores first. Then you won't forget. I expect you'll forget lots of things now if I don't keep an eye on you."
"Can I have carrots from the garden for him, ma'am?"
She had to think about that.
"Oh, I guess so, if you only take the big tough ones." "Carrots keep the coat good," he said,
and again she felt the curious rush of pride. Jody never waited for the triangle to get him out of bed after the coming of the pony. It became his habit to creep out of bed even before his mother was awake, to slip into his clothes, and to go quietly down to the barn to see Gabalon. In the gray, quiet mornings when the land and the brush and the houses and the trees were silver gray and black like a photograph negative, he stole toward the barn past the sleeping stones and the sleeping cypress tree. The turkeys roosting in the tree out of Coyote's reach clicked drowsily. The fields glowed with a gray frost-like light, and in the dew the tracks of rabbits and of field mice stood out sharply. The good dogs came stiffly out of their little houses, hackles up and deep growls in their throats. Then they caught Jody's scent, and their stiff tails rose up and waved a greeting, Doubletree Mutt with the big thick tail and Smasher the incipient shepherd, then went lazily back to their warm beds. It was a strange time and a mysterious journey to Jody, an extension of a dream. When he first had the pony, he liked to torture himself during the trip by thinking Gabalon would not be in his stall, and worse, would never have been there. And he had other delicious little self-induced pains. He thought how the rats had gnawed ragged holes in the red saddle, and how the mice had nibbled Gabalon's tail until it was stringy and thin. He usually ran the last little way to the barn. He unlatched the rusty hasp of the barn door and stepped in, and no matter how quietly he opened the door, Gabalon was always looking at him over the barrier of the box stall, and Gabalon whinnied softly and stamped his front foot, and his eyes had big sparks of red fire in them, like oakwood embers. Sometimes, if the workhorses were to be used that day, Jody found Billy Buck in the barn, harnessing and currying. Billy stood with him and looked long at Gabalon, and he told Jody a great many things about horses. He explained that they were terribly afraid for their feet, so that one must make a practice of lifting the legs and patting the hooves and ankles to remove their terror. He told Jody how horses love conversation. He must talk to the pony all the time and tell him the reasons for everything. Billy wasn't sure a horse could understand everything that was said to him, but it was impossible to say how much was understood. A horse never kicked up a fuss if someone he liked explained things to him. Billy could give examples, too. He had known, for instance, a horse nearly dead beat with fatigue to perk up when told it was only a little farther to his destination. And he had known a horse paralyzed with fright to come out of it when his rider told him what it was that was frightening him. While he talked in the mornings, Billy Buck cut 20 or 30 straws into neat 3-inch lengths and stuck them into his hatband. Then, during the whole day, if he wanted to pick his teeth or merely to chew on something, he had only to reach up for one of them. Jody listened carefully, for he knew, and the whole country knew, that Billy Buck was a fine hand with horses. Billy's own horse was a stringy cayuse with a hammer head, but he nearly always won first prize at the stock trials. Billy could rope a steer, take a double half-hitch about the horn with his riata, and dismount, and his horse would play the steer as an angler plays a fish, keeping a tight rope until the steer was down or beaten. Every morning, after Jody had curried and brushed the pony, he let down the barrier of the stall, and Gabalon thrust past him and raced down the barn and into the corral. Around and around he galloped, and sometimes he jumped forward and landed on stiff legs. He stood quivering, stiff ears forward, eyes rolling so that the white showed, pretending to be frightened. At last he walked snorting to the water trough and buried his nose in the water up to the nostrils. Jody was proud then, for he knew that was the way to judge a horse. Poor horses only touched their lips to the water, but a fine, spirited beast put his whole nose and mouth under and only left room to breathe. Then Jody stood and watched the pony, and he saw things he had never noticed about any other horse, the sleek, sliding flank muscles, and the cords of the buttocks which flexed like a closing fist, and the shine the sun put on the red coat. Having seen horses all his life, Jody had never looked at them very closely before. But now he noticed the moving ears, which gave expression and even inflection of expression to the face. The pony talked with his ears. You could tell exactly how he felt about everything by the way his ears pointed. Sometimes they were stiff and upright, and sometimes lax and sagging. They went back when he was angry or fearful, and forward when he was anxious and curious and pleased. And their exact position indicated which emotion he had. Billy Buck kept his word. In the early fall, the training began. First there was the halter breaking, and that was the hardest, because it was the first thing. Jody held a carrot, and coaxed, and promised, and pulled on the rope. The pony set his feet like a burro when he felt the strain. But before long, he learned. Jody walked all over the ranch, leading him. Gradually he took to dropping the rope until the pony followed him, unled, wherever he went. And then came the training on the long halter. That was slower work. Jody stood in the middle of a circle, holding the long halter. He clucked with his tongue, and the pony started to walk in a big circle, held in by the long rope. He clucked again to make the pony trot, and again to make him gallop. Around and around Gabalon went, thundering and enjoying it immensely. Then he called, "Whoa!" and the pony stopped. It was not long until Gabalon was perfect at it. But in many ways he was a bad pony. He bit Jody in the pants and stomped on Jody's feet. Now and then his ears went back and he aimed a tremendous kick at the boy. Every time he did one of these bad things, Gabalon settled back and seemed to laugh to himself. Billy Buck worked at the hair rope in the evenings before the fireplace. Jody collected tail hair in a bag, and he sat and watched Billy slowly constructing the rope, twisting a few hairs to make a string, and rolling two strings together for a cord, and then braiding a number of cords to make the rope. Billy rolled the finished rope on the floor under his foot to make it round and hard. The long halter work rapidly approached perfection. Jody's father, watching the pony stop and start and trot and gallop, was a little bothered by it. "He's getting to be almost a trick pony," he complained. "I don't like trick horses. It takes all the dignity out of a horse to make him do tricks. Why, a trick horse is kind of like an actor. No dignity, no character of his own." And his father said, "I guess you better be getting him used to the saddle pretty soon." Jody rushed for the harness room. For some time he had been riding the saddle on a sawhorse. He changed the stirrup length over and over and could never get it just right. Sometimes, mounted on the sawhorse in the harness room with collars and hames and tugs hung all about him, Jody rode out beyond the room. He carried his rifle across the pommel. He saw the fields go flying by, and he heard the beat of the galloping hoofs. It was a ticklish job saddling the pony the first time. Gabalon hunched and reared and threw the saddle off before the cinch could be tightened. It had to be replaced again and again, until at last the pony let it stay. And the cinching was difficult, too. Day by day, Jody tightened the girth a little more, until at last the pony didn't mind the saddle at all. Then there was the bridle. Billy explained how to use a stick of licorice for a bit until Gabalon was used to having something in his mouth. Billy explained, of course, we could force-break him to everything, but he wouldn't be as good a horse if we did. He'd always be a little bit afraid, and he wouldn't mind because he wanted to. The first time the pony wore the bridle, he whipped his head about and worked his tongue against the bit until the blood oozed from the corners of his mouth. He tried to rub the headstall off on the manger. His ears pivoted about, and his eyes turned red with fear and with general rambunctiousness. Jody rejoiced, for he knew that only a mean-souled horse does not resent training. And Jody trembled when he thought of the time when he would first sit in the saddle. The pony would probably throw him off. There was no disgrace in that. The disgrace would come if he did not get right up and mount again. Sometimes he dreamed that he lay in the dirt and cried and couldn't make himself mount again. The shame of the dream lasted until the middle of the day. Gabalon was growing fast. Already he had lost the long-leggedness of the colt. His mane was getting longer and blacker. Under the constant currying and brushing, his coat lay as smooth and gleaming as orange-red lacquer. Jody oiled the hoofs and kept them carefully trimmed so they would not crack. The hair rope was nearly finished. Jody's father gave him an old pair of spurs and bent in the sidebars and cut down the strap and took up the chainlets until they fitted. And then one day Carl Tiflin said, "The pony's growing faster than I thought. I guess you can ride him by Thanksgiving. Think he can stick on?"
"I don't know," Jody said shyly.
Thanksgiving was only 3 weeks off. He hoped it wouldn't rain, for rain would spot the red saddle. Gabalon knew and liked Jody by now. He nickered when Jody came across the stubble field, and in the pasture he came running when his master whistled for him. There was always a carrot for him every time. Billy Buck gave him riding instructions over and over. "Now, when you get up there, just grab tight with your knees and keep your hands away from the saddle. And if you get throwed, don't let that stop you. No matter how good a man is, there's always some horse can pitch him. You just climb up again before he gets to feeling smart about it. Pretty soon he won't throw you no more, and pretty soon he can't throw you no more. That's the way to do it."
"I hope it don't rain before," Jody said.
"Why not? Don't want to get throwed in the mud?" That was partly it, and also he was afraid that in the flurry of bucking, Gabalon might slip and fall on him and break his leg or his hip. He had seen that happen to men before, had seen how they writhed on the ground like squashed bugs, and he was afraid of it. He practiced on the sawhorse how he would hold the reins in his left hand and a hat in his right hand. If he kept his hands thus busy, he couldn't grab the horn if he felt himself going off. He didn't like to think of what would happen if he did grab the horn. Perhaps his father and Billy Buck would never speak to him again. They would be so ashamed. The news would get about, and his mother would be ashamed, too. And in the schoolyard, it was too awful to contemplate. He began putting his weight in a stirrup when Gabalon was saddled, but he didn't throw his leg over the pony's back. That was forbidden until Thanksgiving. Every afternoon he put the red saddle on the pony and cinched it tight. The pony was learning already to fill his stomach out unnaturally large while the cinching was going on, and then to let it down when the straps were fixed. Sometimes Jody led him up to the brush line and let him drink from the round green tub, and sometimes he led him up through the stubble field to the hilltop, from which it was possible to see the white town of Salinas and the geometric fields of the great valley and the oak trees clipped by the sheep. Now and then they broke through the brush and came to little cleared circles so hedged in that the world was gone and only the sky and the circle of brush were left from the old life. Gabalon liked these trips and showed it by keeping his head very high and by quivering his nostrils with interest. When the two came back from an expedition, they smelled of the sweet sage they had forced through. Time dragged on toward Thanksgiving, but winter came fast. The clouds swept down and hung all day over the land and brushed the hilltops, and the winds blew shrilly at night. All day the dry oak leaves drifted down from the trees until they covered the ground, and yet the trees were unchanged. Jody had wished it might not rain before Thanksgiving, but it did. The brown earth turned dark and the trees glistened. The cut ends of the stubble turned black with mildew, the haystacks grayed from exposure to the damp, and on the roofs the moss, which had been all summer as gray as lizards, turned a brilliant yellow-green. During the week of rain, Jody kept the pony in the box stall out of the dampness, except for a little time after school when he took him out for exercise and to drink at the water trough in the upper corral. Not once did Gabalon get wet. The wet weather continued until little new grass appeared. Jody walked to school dressed in a slicker and short rubber boots. At length one morning the sun came out brightly. Jody, at his work in the box stall, said to Billy Buck, "Maybe I'll leave Gabalon in the corral when I go to school today." "Be good for him to be out in the sun," Billy assured him. "No animal likes to be cooped up too long. Your father and me are going back on the hill to clean the leaves out of the spring." Billy nodded and picked his teeth with one of his little straws. "If the rain comes, though," Jody suggested. "Not likely to rain today. She's rained herself out." Billy pulled up his sleeves and snapped his armbands. "If it comes on to rain, why, a little rain don't hurt a horse."
"Well, if it does come on to rain, you put him in, will you, Billy? I'm scared he might get cold so I couldn't ride him when the time comes."
"Oh, sure, I'll watch out for him if we get back in time, but it won't rain today."
And so Jody, when he went to school, left Gabalon standing out in the corral. Billy Buck wasn't wrong about many things. He couldn't be. But he was wrong about the weather that day. For a little afternoon, the clouds pushed over the hills, and the rain began to pour down. Jody heard it start on the schoolhouse roof. He considered holding up one finger for permission to go to the outhouse, and once outside, running for home to put the pony in. Punishment would be prompt both at school and at home. He gave it up and took ease from Billy's assurance that rain couldn't hurt a horse. When school was finally out, he hurried home through the dark rain. The banks at the sides of the road spouted little jets of muddy water. The rain slanted and swirled under a cold and gusty wind. Jody dog-trotted home, slopping through the gravelly mud of the road. From the top of the ridge he could see Gabalon standing miserably in the corral. The red coat was almost black and streaked with water. He stood head down with his rump to the rain and wind. Jody arrived running and threw open the barn door and led the wet pony in by his forelock. Then he found a gunny sack and rubbed the soaked hair and rubbed the legs and ankles. Gabalon stood patiently, but he trembled in gusts like the wind. When he had dried the pony as well as he could, Jody went up to the house and brought hot water down to the barn and soaked the grain in it. Gabalon was not very hungry. He nibbled at the hot mash, but he was not very much interested in it, and he still shivered now and then. A little steam rose from his damp back. It was almost dark when Billy Buck and Carl Tiflin came home.
"When the rain started, we put up at Ben Hirschy's place, and the rain never let up all afternoon," Carl Tiflin explained.
Jody looked reproachfully at Billy Buck, and Billy felt guilty.
"You said it wouldn't rain," Jody accused him.
Billy looked away.
"It's hard to tell this time of year," he said.
But his excuse was lame. He had no right to be fallible, and he knew it.
"The pony got wet, got soaked through."
"Did you dry him off?"
"I rubbed him with a sack and I gave him hot grain."
Billy nodded in agreement.
"Do you think he'll take cold, Billy?"
"A little rain never hurt anything," Billy assured him.
Jody's father joined the conversation then and lectured the boy a little. "A horse," he said, "isn't any lapdog kind of thing." Carl Tiflin hated weakness and sickness, and he held a violent contempt for helplessness. Jody's mother put a platter of steaks on the table and boiled potatoes and boiled squash, which clouded the room with their steam. They sat down to eat. Carl Tiflin still grumbled about weakness put into animals and men by too much coddling. Billy Buck felt bad about his mistake.
"Did you blanket him?" he asked.
"No, I couldn't find any blanket. I laid some sacks over his back."
"We'll go down and cover him up after we eat, then."
Billy felt better about it then. When Jody's father had gone into the fire and his mother was washing dishes, Billy found and lighted a lantern. He and Jody walked through the mud to the barn. The barn was dark and warm and sweet. The horses still munched their evening hay.
"You hold the lantern," Billy ordered.
And he felt the pony's legs and tested the heat of his flanks. He put his cheek against the pony's gray muzzle, and then he rolled up the eyelids to look at the eyeballs, and he lifted the lips to see the gums, and he put his fingers inside the ears.
"You don't seem so chipper," Billy said. "I'll give him a rub down."
Then Billy found a sack and rubbed the pony's legs violently, and he rubbed the chest and the withers. Gabalon was strangely spiritless. He submitted patiently to the rubbing. At last Billy brought an old cotton comforter from the saddle room and threw it over the pony's back and tied it at neck and chest with string.
"Now he'll be all right in the morning," Billy said.
Jody's mother looked up when he got back to the house.
"You're laid up from bed," she said.
She held his chin in her hard hand and brushed the tangled hair out of his eyes, and she said, "Don't worry about the pony. He'll be all right. Billy's as good as any horse doctor in the country." Jody hadn't known she could see his worry. He pulled gently away from her and knelt down in front of the fireplace until it burned his stomach. He scorched himself through and then went into bed, but it was a hard thing to go to sleep. He awakened after what seemed a long time. The room was dark, but there was a grayness in the window like that which precedes the dawn. He got up and found his overalls and searched for the legs, and then the clock in the other room struck two. He laid his clothes down and got back into bed. It was broad daylight when he awakened again. For the first time he had slept through the ringing of the triangle. He leaped up, flung on his clothes, and went out of the door still buttoning his shirt. His mother looked after him for a moment and then went quietly back to her work. Her eyes were brooding and kind. Now and then her mouth smiled a little, but without changing her eyes at all. Jody ran on toward the barn. Halfway there he heard the sound he dreaded, the hollow, rasping cough of a horse. He broke into a sprint then. In the barn he found Billy Buck with the pony. Billy was rubbing its legs with his strong, thick hands. He looked up and smiled gaily.
"He just took a little cold," Billy said. "We'll have him out of it in a couple of days."
Jody looked at the pony's face. The eyes were half closed and the lids thick and dry. In the eye corners a crust of hard mucus stuck. Gabalon's ears hung loosely sideways and his head was low. Jody put out his hand, but the pony did not move close to it. He coughed again, and his whole body constricted with the effort. A little stream of thin fluid ran from his nostrils. Jody looked back at Billy Buck.
"He's awful sick, Billy."
"Just a little cold, like I said," Billy insisted. "You go get some breakfast and then go back to school. I'll take care of him."
"But you might have to do something else. You might leave him."
"No, I won't. I won't leave him at all. Tomorrow's Saturday. Then you can stay with him all day."
Billy had failed again, and he felt badly about it. He had to cure the pony now. Jody walked up to the house and took his place listlessly at the table. The eggs and bacon were cold and greasy, but he didn't notice it. He ate his usual amount. He didn't even ask to stay home from school. His mother pushed his hair back when she took his plate.
"Billy'll take care of the pony," she assured him.
He moped through the whole day at school. He couldn't answer any questions nor read any words. He couldn't even tell anyone the pony was sick, for that might make him sicker. And when school was finally out, he started home in dread. He walked slowly and let the other boys leave him. He wished he might continue walking and never arrive at the ranch. Billy was in the barn, as he had promised, and the pony was worse. His eyes were almost closed now, and his breath whistled shrilly past an obstruction in his nose. A film covered that part of the eyes that was visible at all. It was doubtful whether the pony could see any more. Now and then he snorted to clear his nose, and by the action seemed to plug it tighter. Jody looked dispiritedly at the pony's coat. The hair lay rough and unkempt and seemed to have lost all of its old luster. Billy stood quietly beside the stall. Jody hated to ask, but he had to know.
"Billy, is he going to get well?"
Billy put his fingers between the bars under the pony's jaw and felt about. "Feel here," he said, and he guided Jody's fingers to a large lump under the jaw. "When that gets bigger, I'll open it up and he'll get better." Jody looked quickly away, for he had heard about that lump.
"What is it the matter with him?"
Billy didn't want to answer, but he had to. He couldn't be wrong three times. "Strangles," he said shortly. "But don't you worry about that. I'll pull him out of it. I've seen him get well when they were worse than Gabalon is. I'm going to steam him now. You can help."
"Yes," Jody said miserably.
He followed Billy into the grain room and watched him make the steaming bag ready. It was a long canvas nose bag with straps to go over a horse's ears. Billy filled it one-third full of bran, and then he added a couple of handfuls of dried hops. On top of the dry substance, he poured a little carbolic acid and a little turpentine.
"I'll be mixing it all up while you run to the house for a kettle of boiling water," Billy said.
When Jody came back with the steaming kettle, Billy buckled the straps over Gabalon's head and fitted the bag tightly around his nose. Then, through a little hole in the side of the bag, he poured the boiling water on the mixture. The pony started away as a cloud of strong steam rose up, but then the soothing fumes crept through his nose and into his lungs, and the sharp steam began to clear out the nasal passages. He breathed loudly. His legs trembled in an ague, and his eyes closed against the biting cloud. Billy poured in more water and kept the steam rising for 15 minutes. At last he set down the kettle and took the bag from Gabalon's nose. The pony looked better. He breathed freely, and his eyes were open wider than they had been.
"See how good it makes him feel," Billy said. "Now we'll wrap him up in the blanket again. Maybe he'll be nearly well by morning."
"I'll stay with him tonight," Jody suggested.
"Nah, don't you do it. I'll bring my blankets down here and put him in the hay. You can stay tomorrow and steam him if he needs it."
The evening was falling when they went to the house for their supper. Jody didn't even realize that someone else had fed the chickens and filled the wood box. He walked up past the house to the dark brush line and took a drink of water from the tub. The spring water was so cold that it stung his mouth and drove a shiver through him. The sky above the hills was still light. He saw a hawk flying so high that it caught the sun on its breast and shone like a spark. Two blackbirds were driving him down the sky, glittering as they attacked their enemy. In the west, the clouds were moving in to rain again. Jody's father didn't speak at all while the family ate supper, but after Billy Buck had taken his blankets and gone to sleep in the barn, Carl Tiflin built a high fire in the fireplace and told stories. He told about the wild man who ran naked through the country and had a tail and ears like a horse, and he told about the rabbit cats of Morocoho that hopped into the trees for birds. He revived the famous Maxwell brothers, who found a vein of gold and hid the traces of it so carefully that they could never find it again. Jody sat with his chin in his hands. His mouth worked nervously, and his father gradually became aware that he wasn't listening very carefully. "Isn't that funny?" he asked. Jody laughed politely and said, "Yes, sir." His father was angry and hurt then. He didn't tell any more stories. After a while, Jody took a lantern and went down to the barn. Billy Buck was asleep in the hay, and except that his breath rasped a little in his lungs, the pony seemed to be much better. Jody stayed a little while, running his fingers over the red, rough coat, and then he took up the lantern and went back to the house. When he was in bed, his mother came into the room.
"Have you enough covers on? It's getting winter."
"Yes, ma'am." Well, get some rest tonight. She hesitated to go out, stood uncertainly. The pony will be all right, she said. Jody was tired. He went to sleep quickly and didn't awaken until dawn. The triangle sounded and Billy Buck came up from the barn before Jody could get out of the house. How is he? Jody demanded. Billy always wolfed his breakfast. Pretty good. I'm going to open that lump this morning. Then he'll be better, maybe. After breakfast, Billy got out his best knife, one with a needle point. He whetted the shining blade a long time on a little carborundum stone. He tried the point and the blade again and again on his calloused thumb ball, and at last he tried it on his upper lip. On the way to the barn, Jody noticed how the young grass was up and how the stubble was melting day by day into the new green crop of volunteer. It was a cold, sunny morning. As soon as he saw the pony, Jody knew he was worse. His eyes were closed and sealed shut with dried mucus. His head hung so low that his nose almost touched the straw of his bed. There was a little groan in each breath, a deep-seated, patient groan. Billy lifted the weak head and made a quick slash with the knife. Jody saw the yellow pus run out. He held up the head while Billy swabbed out the wound with weak carbolic acid salve. "Now he'll feel better," Billy assured him. "That yellow poison is what makes him sick." Jody looked unbelieving at Billy Buck. "He's awful sick." Billy thought a long time what to say. He nearly tossed off a careless assurance, but he saved himself in time. "Yes, he's pretty sick," he said at last. "I've seen worse ones get well. If he doesn't get pneumonia, we'll pull him through. You stay with him. If he gets worse, you can come and get me." For a long time after Billy went away, Jody stood beside the pony, stroking him behind the ears. The pony didn't flip his head the way he had done when he was well. The groaning in his breathing was becoming more hollow. Doubletree Mutt looked into the barn, his big tail waving provocatively, and Jody was so incensed at his health that he found a hard black clod on the floor and deliberately threw it. Doubletree Mutt went yelping away to nurse a bruised paw. In the middle of the morning, Billy Buck came back and made another steam bag. Jody watched to see whether the pony improved this time as he had before. His breathing eased a little, but he did not raise his head. The Saturday dragged on. Late in the afternoon, Jody went to the house and brought his bedding down and made up a place to sleep in the hay. He didn't ask permission. He knew from the way his mother looked at him that she would let him do almost anything. That night he left a lantern burning on a wire over the box stall. Billy had told him to rub the pony's legs every little while. At 9 o'clock the wind sprang up and howled around the barn, and in spite of his worry, Jody grew sleepy. He got into his blankets and went to sleep, but the breathy groans of the pony sounded in his dreams. And in his sleep he heard a crashing noise, which went on and on until it awakened him. The wind was rushing through the barn. He sprang up and looked down the lane of stalls. The barn door had blown open and the pony was gone. He caught the lantern and ran outside into the gale, and he saw Gabalon weakly shambling away into the darkness, head down, legs working slowly and mechanically. When Jody ran up and caught him by the forelock, he allowed himself to be led back and put into his stall. His groans were louder, and a fierce whistling came from his nose. Jody didn't sleep any more then. The hissing of the pony's breath grew louder and sharper. He was glad when Billy Buck came in at dawn. Billy looked for a time at the pony as though he had never seen him before. He felt the ears and flanks. "Jody," he said, "I've got to do something you won't want to see. You run up to the house for a while." Jody grabbed him fiercely by the forearm. "You're not going to shoot him?" Billy patted his hand. "No, I'm going to open a little hole in his windpipe so he can breathe. His nose is filled up. When it gets well, we'll put a little brass button in the hole for him to breathe through." Jody couldn't have gone away if he had wanted to.
It was awful to see the red hide cut, but infinitely more terrible to know it was being cut and not to see it.
"I'll stay right here," he said bitterly. "You sure you got to?"
"Yes, I'm sure. If you stay, you can hold his head. If it doesn't make you sick, that is."
The fine knife came out again and was whetted again just as carefully as it had been the first time. Jody held the pony's head up and the throat taut, while Billy felt up and down for the right place. Jody sobbed once as the bright knife point disappeared into the throat. The pony plunged weakly away, and then stood still, trembling violently. The blood ran thickly out and up the knife and across Billy's hand and into his shirt sleeve. The sure, square hand sought out a round hole in the flesh, and the breath came bursting out of the hole, throwing a fine spray of blood. With the rush of oxygen, the pony took a sudden strength. He lashed out with his hind feet and tried to rear, but Jody held his head down while Billy mopped the new wound with carbolic salve. It was a good job. The blood stopped flowing and the air puffed out the hole and sucked it in regularly with a little bubbling noise. The rain brought in by the night wind began to fall on the barn roof. Then the triangle rang for breakfast. "You go up and eat while I wait," Billy said. "We've got to keep this hole from plugging up." Jody walked slowly out of the barn. He was too dispirited to tell Billy how the barn door had blown open and let the pony out. He emerged into the wet, gray morning and sloshed up to the house, taking a perverse pleasure in splashing through all the puddles. His mother fed him and put dry clothes on. She didn't question him. She seemed to know he couldn't answer questions. But when he was ready to go back to the barn, she brought him a pan of steaming meal. "Give him this," she said. But Jody did not take the pan. He said, "He won't eat anything," and ran out of the house. At the barn, Billy showed him how to fix a ball of cotton on a stick with which to swab out the breathing hole when it became clogged with mucus. Jody's father walked into the barn and stood with them in front of the stall. At length he turned to the boy. "Hadn't you better come with me? I want to drive over the hill." Jody shook his head. "You better come on out of this," his father insisted. Billy turned on him angrily. "Let him alone. It's his pony, isn't it?" Carl Tiflin walked away without saying another word. His feelings were badly hurt. All morning, Jody kept the wound open and the air passing in and out freely. At noon, the pony lay wearily down on his side and stretched his nose out. Billy came back. "If you're going to stay with him tonight, you better take a little nap," he said. Jody went absently out of the barn. The sky had cleared to a hard, thin blue. Everywhere the birds were busy with worms that had come to the damp surface of the ground. Jody walked to the brush line and sat on the edge of the mossy tub. He looked down at the house and at the old bunkhouse and at the dark cypress tree. The place was familiar but curiously changed. It wasn't itself anymore, but a frame for things that were happening. A cold wind blew out of the east now, signifying that the rain was over for a little while. At his feet, Jody could see the little arms of new weeds spreading out over the ground. In the mud about the spring were thousands of quail tracks. Doubletree Mutt came sideways and embarrassed up through the vegetable patch, and Jody, remembering how he had thrown the clod, put his arm about the dog's neck and kissed him on his wide black nose. Doubletree Mutt sat still, as though he knew some solemn thing was happening. His big tail slapped the ground gravely. Jody pulled a swollen tick out of Mutt's neck and popped it dead between his thumbnails. It was a nasty thing. He washed his hands in the cold spring water. Except for the steady swish of the wind, the farm was very quiet. Jody knew his mother wouldn't mind if he didn't go in to eat his lunch. After a little while, he went slowly back to the barn. Mutt crept into his own little house and whined softly to himself for a long time. Billy Buck stood up from the box and surrendered the cotton swab. The pony still lay on his side, and the wound in his throat bellowed in and out. When Jody saw how dry and dead the hair looked, he knew at last that there was no hope for the pony. He had seen the dead hair before on dogs and on cows, and it was a sure sign. He sat heavily on the box and